There's a brand new chair in here. Brand new. It's one of those ergonomically safe and comfortably structured chairs that you're supposed to sit at when you're working in an office setting, a desk all the time. It's very comfortable, but it's too high, even at its lowest setting. So I just leaned on the chair with all of my might and pushed the lever underneath the seat and pushed it down as far as it will go. But it's still too high. The microphone doesn't reach. I'd have to point the microphone up, and then I would still not have the right angle for you to get the best sound. Not that anyone has ever accused me of being too quiet, but I don't want to be off mic because that makes for bad audio. So I'm back to the old chair, which is okay. I think it's kind of conformed to my rear end, if you will. It's a chair I think I've been sitting in the same chair for the better part of 12 years. Not that I'm the only one who uses it, but now there's a new chair for the host spot. But it's more like a fit for a higher desk or even, it's not quite the height of a bar stool. But when you let the lever allow the chair to go all the way up, so you release the lever, it does go high enough to compete with a bar stool. It's that high, so it feels very awkward. And also, the mic doesn't point at that angle. So the new chair is just sitting over there in the corner. Wow, that's pretty. It's like when we get Christmas ornaments or Christmas decorations in here. Oh, isn't that nice? Look how sparkly. Brand new chair. Nice leather seat. Do you also have new chairs in the control room, Producer Pete?
Yes, I'm glad we have arms on chairs. I'm very thankful.
So you have a new chair as well?
Yes.
Yeah, so this, I'm pretty sure, is a chair that's more built for you in there because your console is higher than the desk I sit at. But not only do my knees barely fit underneath the desk when I use that chair, barely. I could easily bang my knees multiple times. But I don't know if you saw, when I tried sitting in it, I'm way above the microphone, a good 6-7 inches above the microphone.
Posture.
Well, I know, but if I use that chair,
I know.
I'll be bending over to use the mic, which is not happening.
Not worth it. Nope.
No. So, unfortunately, I guess someone else gets the new chair, and I'm going to use the old chair. But I'm glad that, I guess no one considered the height of the desk when they brought in a new chair. Or maybe I'm just too big for the new chair. I don't know. Do we have any petite radio hosts here on the network? Trying to think if there's anyone petite who would be, how about a really short person who has a shorter torso and that way coming out of the chair, their mouths are even with the mic.
I have to do my measurements on people.
No, please don't. I feel like that might be an HR violation or a PR violation.
Yeah, probably.
Or both of those things. So new chair looks very nice there in the corner. That's where it will stay. Should have known. I was all excited there for a second, but it's not a new chair for me. I'm just after hours with Amy Lawrence. We don't get new chairs around here. We would love to connect with you, though, if you have some office chair stories. At least it's not me sending a reply all to the entire company with my vacation schedule. That is far worse. Though you all made me happy last week and, you know, misery loves company when you told me about some other office faux pas. One listener said that she sent a text message to her boss that was intended for her boyfriend. Oh, thank heavens, I've never done that. That would be brutal. But we're not going to make those types of mistakes this week. It's a new week, and we're going to instead talk about the Cowboys and how miserable they are and how the Texans have got another big win, but have they truly broken out of their offensive funk? Nico Collins can definitely help. A healthy Joe Mixon, he's a major energizer bunny for their offense, and yet still, they're not completely in sync. Not what we saw from CJ Stroud a year ago, which doesn't really mean anything. He's still a relatively young QB, and defensive coordinators have more tape on him and the ability to send different looks at him. So he's going to have to adjust and get better. But a win is a win is a win is a win. And this one had special teams and defense, as well as some offense against the hapless Dallas Cowboys, who started with A roof issue? No, I'm actually not kidding. I know this would be a punchline for the Dallas Cowboys considering their debate about sun coming in the top of AT&T Stadium a week ago and CeeDee Lamb complaining about the sun in his eyes. If you were watching the Monday Night Mannings as I was doing, then maybe you heard Eli Manning make a snide remark about the sun. He had a good time with that. And it was funny because really no one else laughed. Peyton didn't laugh. I'm not sure Peyton was listening. And Bill Belichick, it went right over his head. So Eli was the only one laughing at his own sunshine joke, except for those of us around the country. So yes, even before the game started, they attempted to open the roof there at AT&T Stadium. And when they did, a bunch of debris came flying down from the top of the structure. So that happened long before kickoff. If you've seen the photos or the video, people had to haul off a large piece of debris. Oh, gosh. And producer Pete, did you happen to see how the Texans social media team used the debris to troll the Cowboys once this game was done?
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's amazing. No, it's actually really cool. They used essentially a model of the debris or two pieces of the debris to make an L. And put it out there on Twix when the game was over. So if you want, you can retweet it from our show account.
I was going to say make a quarterback.
At Amy After Hours. I'm not sure there was that much debris. There was some debris. There were some scraps that fell from the roof. But there was also one rectangular long piece of metal. So it's a long rectangle, almost like you will see at some homes or churches or other community organizations when they gather for Thanksgiving. They'll have a long table. It was like that, only it was a piece of pliable metal and did not have any legs because that would have been far worse. Thankfully, no one was hurt as this debris fell from the top of the Cowboy Stadium. And Jerry Jones obviously being asked about it after the fact because considering that this is his multi-billion dollar facility, there shouldn't be metal falling from the roof.
Apparently did a little damage, and then when we tried to open it up, the winds got underneath the roof at that time, and so everybody agreed that it did some damage, but if you check around, Dallas had wind gusts all afternoon. I think they call them wind bursts or something like that. Fixable, but it wasn't the situation, time or otherwise, to do it tonight, and certainly there was no risk at all to anybody on the field playing once we shut the roof. And again, had a lot of wind gusts in this area this afternoon, and apparently that created some looseness up there, and then when we did try to open it up, the wind got in there and exacerbated the looseness.
So that's Jerry Jones talking about the wind gusts and the bursts and the various environmental factors that contributed to this piece of metal, a large piece of metal and some other debris falling from the roof. This was about 2 hours before kickoff, and there were no fans in the stands. There were no players. There were no injuries. They're just trying to figure out when they can reopen the roof safely so that they can make sure they fix whatever has come loose up there, re-secure. But they did point to high winds with this piece of metal that fell. I just know that the Texans had fun trolling them with their own version of the metal debris that fell from the roof. You can find it online at Amy After Hours. And then on our Facebook page as well, either one of our social media sites, go and vote for Monday MVP because that poll is still live for another hour. I know, it's called Monday MVP. You all get mad at me sometimes because the poll is posted and people are voting long before we get to Monday Night Football. I dare say you'd have another candidate if you were considering the Texans.
At the 45-yard line of Dallas, first and 10. Hand off Mixon, starts right, cuts back left, has room, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, rock and roll, touchdown, Joe Mixon.
And no flags.
CJ gets the snap, here's Mixon, running to the right, he's got all day, runs across the goal line, two TDs on the evening for Monday Night Mixon.
Oops, that's me. I forgot to turn on my microphone. So look, now I'm distracted by the chair. It's over my shoulder. It's in my peripheral vision, and I'm looking longingly at the chair and trying to figure out if I can make it work. And instead, I'm not thinking about the fact that Joe Mixon, he had two TDs in the first quarter, actually. But now I'm focused again. He ended up with 20 carries, 109 yards, and three scores, the last one coming in the fourth quarter to cap another extended drive for Houston. And the second one came after a Cooper Rush interception. So they were able to use Joe Mixon as their closer. Big night for him. He wasn't the only one. The Houston defense also had a couple of moments in which... I would say the Texans social media team could troll Dallas again if they wanted to. One kind of crazy sequence, which is fun to watch over and over just to see all the different hands that touched the football. You could say this was final nail in the coffin, though I don't know that the Cowboys can score more than 10 points anyway.
Second and six for Dallas from their 40. Cooper Rush with Daddle to his left, bunch formation right after motion. Rush in trouble. Strip sack. Who's got it? It's still loose. Texans pick it up. Here's Barnett on the run. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Scoop, score, Derek Barnett.
Mark Vandermeer is the voice of the Houston Texans radio network. We'll work in some of the Kevin Harlan calls as well on Westwood One. But there were a bunch of different guys who were able to get a hand on this ball. So it was Derek Barnett initially who forced the fumble on Cooper Rush. Then it gets picked up by a Cowboy. So it doesn't stay in the hands of Derek Barnett initially. So if you skip a step and you realize that Barnett had the fumble return for the touchdown, you think, oh, yeah, it was a safe delivery. No issues. He recovered it once he forced the fumble, and that was terrific that he's able to rumble into the end zone. But instead, what happens is you end up with Tyler Guyton then, who kind of catches the ball on the carom, only to have it knocked away by Jalen Petrie. He knocks the ball loose a second time. So I kind of feel like this counts as two fumbles. I don't know if they determined that that Guyton had it long enough, and if they use the same standard as they do for receivers who make a catch, you have to do the two steps and the football move right before they can determine it to be a catch. But either way, it went from Cooper Rush, knocked away by Barnett, then in the hands of Guyton, then knocked away again by Petrie, only to get picked up by Barnett and rumbled, or rushed, I should say, rushed, rumbled, stumbled, he rumbled, stumbled, bumbled into the end zone. It's a scoop and score, but I kind of wonder whether or not that goes down as two fumbles. So that was one major statement, major stop by the defense, but there were also lots of moments where the team was able to get pressure. So dominating on that Houston Texans defensive line. Remember, this is without Will Anderson, who still isn't back with them. He's still not healthy on that D-line, their best pass rusher in his second year. But even with sometimes only bringing four guys, the Texans were able to overwhelm the Cowboys' offensive line in many instances and also get to Cooper Rush and put pressure on Cooper Rush. So the final touchdown of the game for the Texans, the third for Joe Mixon, came after the fifth Houston sack, which was a fourth down opportunity for the Cowboys, and Cooper Rush never really had a chance. It's after hours with Amy Lawrence. For the Texans, this is a much needed win. Forget who it is they're playing and what the record is. This was an opportunity for them to try to find that rhythm again. And initially in the first quarter, they didn't have it. Nico Collins got the first pass from C.J. Stroud, and a touchdown is called back. So he breaks loose. He gets all the way into the end zone before a lot of people have even put their dinner plates away and turned on the game. He's into the end zone, but it's called back on, I think it was an illegal downfield, so a legal procedure, a man downfield. I know that Peyton was complaining that that should be taken out of the rule book entirely, but it was good to see Nico get the first ball of the game, even though it was called back. Really, the best plan they had going for them is the ability to run the ball. And behind that offensive line for the Houston Texans, they were able to run the ball to 141 yards in this one, and a huge performance for Joe.
The run game starts with our offensive line. I asked them to challenge them to play fast, play aggressive. Thought they did a really nice job. And Joe, when he's on, he's a force for us. Over 100 yards, 3 touchdowns. Just really liked the way we just kept turning it in a run game, and proud of the guys for stepping up to the challenge.
You know, Joe has been amazing. He's been somebody who came in and taught guys how to win more, you know, because we won some games last year, but, you know, he taught guys what it takes to get to that bowl, you know, and, you know, we're not there yet, but, you know, we're taking strides.
For them to be able to end the win streak, I feel like most teams these days, if you go into AT&T Stadium, you're in good shape because the Cowboys have forgotten how to win at home. But to snap what was a modest skid and get back on the winning track, they're now 7-4, so they are 2 full games ahead of the Colts in the AFC South, and they're the only team above 500 in that division. But more importantly, if you're looking around the AFC, this was big for the Texans because they remain right there in the mix. And we've talked about this over the course of the last couple of days. The Chiefs and the Bills right now have the same number of wins. They're sitting at 9. Steelers have 8 wins, and then it's Baltimore, Houston, and L.A., the Chargers, in the AFC, who have 7 wins. So they are among those top teams in the AFC. And speaking of the Chargers, in 45 minutes, we will head to L.A. to talk to Shannon Farron, who's the sideline reporter and a radio host herself in L.A., to talk about the Chargers and a signature win for them against the Bengals because they did not collapse at the end. And I think that is something we saw on Sunday night that maybe it's different than the past. Not maybe, it is different than the past, because in the past, the Chargers would collapse in those moments and wouldn't have the intestinal fortitude or the ability on the field to withstand a rally, a comeback from a team with a quarterback as good as Joe Burrow. So Shannon Farron will join us in 45 minutes from L.A. Now, for C.J. Stroud, still not quite that same, I don't want to call it magic, because that almost makes it seem as though it was luck, or it wasn't skill. It wasn't his ability to step onto a football field coming out of Ohio State and using his football education as well as his poise and the coaching that he's taken with D'Amico Ryans and his staff. So I don't want to call it magic, because I don't think it's hocus pocus or snap fingers. I do think, though, that sometimes there is an adjustment still that has to take place, even with those quarterbacks who come in and are really comfortable right away. There's just a learning curve. And for him, it was relatively flat at the beginning. Now it's a little steeper. They have had guys on and off the field, which is important, too. But he did get back his top wide receiver in Nico Collins. And even though the early touchdown was waved off, they were able to get him involved with 7 different targets, 4 catches, and 54 yards.
Felt good. You know, it didn't count, but it is what it is. You know, I feel like just being back out there with the guys, man, getting this win on the road, that's the most important thing. You know, just being back out there, having fun, man. I missed them, you know, but I feel like, man, just suiting up, man, getting back out there, having fun, man, I feel like that's the most important thing.
Everyone instantly sees the impact of Nico. Our first offensive play goes for a touchdown. All right, gets called back, but he's a game changer, and we're so thankful and happy to have him back and see what he provides to our entire team.
Returns after a hamstring injury, and that initial ball went for 77 yards. It was the first time he touched the ball, but it was called back because of an ineligible man downfield. I got to tell you, I enjoyed the Mannings and Bill Belichick a lot more than I actually enjoyed the competition in this one. There was one moment where they used video of Belichick on the sidelines at, I think what would have been the old, actually, I'm not sure where it was. It just that it was against the Dallas Cowboys in it was 1994, and so they were showing a much younger Bill Belichick celebrating this game-saving defensive play at the goal line to be able to preserve a win. And so it's kind of funny to see him kind of hooting and hollering. His hair is a much different color. He is a little bit thinner. And he's wearing brown and orange, which is awesome. You don't see many of those types of highlights anymore. But yeah, going back to 1994 when they were playing the Cowboys. And he said, I thought this was really funny. He said what he remembers about that, I believe it was week 15, 1994. What he remembers about that is because that victory by the Browns over Dallas secured the top seed for San Francisco in the upcoming playoffs. The owner of the Niners, who at the time was the DeBartolo family, Eddie DeBartolo from Youngstown, Ohio, the DeBartolo family sent fruit baskets and treats and all kinds of gifts, different meats. He even said something about crabs. So they sent all kinds of thank you gifts to the Browns for securing that top seed by beating the Cowboys. This is the kind of stuff you hear from Bill Belichick that you would never hear any other time, which is why I find him really fascinating in his media role. Though there are certainly some rumors now about where he could land, where he could end up in his return to coaching. So that's what I want to ask you on this edition of the show. Where do you see franchises who will be in need or in search of new head coaches, whether they make it to the end of the season or not? Which head coaches are bound to be replaced? And I know a lot of people are pointing to Mike McCarthy. A lot of people are pointing to the Dallas Cowboys just falling off the cliff. And it started with that game in the playoffs last year, the Packers. They are now 0-6 at home since they won 16 in a row at AT&T Stadium. And it's not just the fact that they're 0-4 in their last six games at home. They are getting creamed at home. Another game here where they lose by 3+ scores. I got to add up all the points for and against the Cowboys at home this year. It's embarrassing. So you'll hear from the Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb, Mike McCarthy, Jerry Jones, of course, as it goes from bad to worse. Texans get the win. Cowboys can't get off the schneid. Week 11 in the books at A-Law Radio. Take our poll for Monday MVP, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Fourth, high formation, Stroud under center, snap, spin, handoff, Mixon, dives, and touchdown. His third touchdown tonight on the ground. That ties a team record, also done by Ryan Moats and Arian Foster, along with Ben Tate.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
Wow, we are now through week 11. It is in the books. Where should we see coaching changes coming up? Either before the end of the season or immediately after the season. You know, they call it Black Monday, but a lot of times it starts on the Sunday night when the season ends. Where do you see coaching changes on the horizon? A lot of people pointing to Dallas. You may have seen the news. Now, I can't confirm that this is accurate, only that I saw it in a lot of different places reported online and on social that Mike McCarthy's Dallas home, his Dallas mansion, it would be a mansion to me regardless, Mike McCarthy's home is for sale in the Dallas area. So that's something that people are pointing to as an indicator that he must know he's gone. He must know that his time in Dallas, in the area, is limited, and there is a countdown. Now, he's not going to say anything other than I've got to do the job that's in front of me, and that's what I'm focused on right now. But it's hard to understand why they cannot seem to turn this around.
It's very frustrating. It's frustrating for everybody. Frustrating for the players, frustrating for the coaches. I know it's it's disappointing for the fans. But we have a lot of moving parts going on, and we just have to be cleaner and more detailed. In certain spots, we're not playing well enough.
Well, all of that is true, but you'd be hard-pressed to find any real answers, even when you're asking analysts or experts, why is it that they can't seem to get it together? Of course, injuries, but a lot of teams have injuries. That's something that every team has to deal with. And yeah, you could say the Chiefs are a great example. One of the reasons why their offensive numbers are down, one of the reasons why they're not blowing teams out is because of the number of pieces that they've lost on the offensive side of the football. The 49ers as well, the two teams that went to the Super Bowl a year ago. You've got a Niners team that it seems like every week it's someone different. Now Brock Purdy is listed as day-to-day, and we'll talk about that coming up. Nick Bosa is injured as well. So when the Cowboys, and that's their owner and general manager who made this determination, decided to be all in for 2024 and try to essentially recreate or recapture what they had in 23, minus the blowout loss at home against the Packers in the first round of the playoffs, they stood pat, and a lot has been made of that. But this team was still really good last year. They were really good at home. They protected that home field. They were a competitive team that seemingly had high hopes for the postseason, unless you talk to more cynical fans, and that's fine. But why isn't it working this year? Even before the injury started to catch up with them, especially on the defensive side of the ball, why couldn't Dak and CeeDee Lamb come up with that same ability to connect and dazzle us? Well, part of the issue is the O-line. We know that it's under construction. This is a couple years now where they're trying to find the right combination again. But also, the run game is nearly non-existent to the point where I'm watching the Mannings, and they had Bill Belichick on. They do now for most of the first half. And they essentially are telling the Cowboys to stop trying to run the ball. It's not effective. It won't work. It's Rico Dowdle, right? And it's an offensive line that really can't clear holes or clear space, especially not against a better D-line like the Texans, who focus on winning in the trenches. They actually said, forget trying to run the ball, as in handoffs. And instead they did what, I mean, Belichick did this with Tom Brady and an offense for years in New England. Short passes, dinks and ducks. Dinks and dunks, although I guess you could throw ducks too if you want to. Peyton Manning would know about ducks. So you're trying to get the ball out quickly, and you're trying to simulate this short passing game. Not only do you protect your quarterback that way, but you also can cover for the holes on the offensive line and the inability to run it north-south. Well, you're trying then to run it east-west and to get out and turn the corner along the sidelines or find a guy in the flat who can then take off with kind of a running start. So that's one issue, a major issue. And yeah, people point to the fact that they didn't get Derrick Henry. They said they couldn't afford Derrick Henry. They couldn't bring him into the fold. They do have salary cap issues, to be sure, but really didn't address it in any other way. So that's a glaring weakness. But it doesn't really explain how they could be this bad. And the frustration is there. And I think now it's starting to kind of dovetail to the point where it's affecting the locker room. Certainly Dak being gone made some major difference. But I'm not confident that they would have turned it around even if he had stayed healthy. But it's everything. It's body language. It's your top wide receiver always looks like he's about ready to suck on a lemon. That's the facial expression, the body language for CeeDee Lamb.
It sucks, to be honest. I mean, it's not so much coping, it's moving on to the next one. I mean, you can't dwell on it. I mean, what happens in the past is now in the past. And we're going to go look at this film, correct what we need to. And, you know, we got to go out there and play better. Get in the end zone. We get in the end zone, we have a whole different conversation.
We're just not playing well enough to beat teams, and it's combinations of things, and we just know that you got to do better with that. We had know we're getting some guys back, but we lost some more tonight. But other teams lose players. That's part
right.
of the NFL.
That's the thing, is you cannot blame injuries. You can say that this is why our team is different, or this is why we don't have the same consistency, but you can't point to injuries solely, because that's something that every team deals with and yet manages to win. And a lot of that has to do with depth. A lot of that has to do with coaching. There's a lot of different ways you can compensate. Think about the Buffalo Bills and the fact that they are have two different starting safeties and their wide receiver room has turned over. And gosh, even yesterday on Sunday, the Bills able to beat the Chiefs without a real competent run game. So didn't have a whole lot against that Chiefs run defense. But instead, you've got other ways that they're making up for it. Amari Cooper goes out and catches two really smart balls. Even without Keon Coleman, they're using guys more like Curtis Samuel. So it has to do with depth. It has to do with roster makeup. Obviously, it has to do with coaching and whether or not these other guys are prepared. And just looking at their stats, and stats don't tell the whole story, they are second from the bottom in the NFL in rushing yards per game. So not even 82 rushing yards per game. Now consider, it's not just the fact that their run game stinks and that they don't have a bell cow. They don't have a quality number one running back, or that the offensive line has got some challenges. It's also the fact that they fall behind so quickly in many games that they're forced to try to throw the ball to catch up, which then means you don't have a lot of a balance in your offense. So that's one area that we just talked about and highlighted. Another area that we've highlighted is the defense. It's just god awful in many cases. And right now, they're giving up nearly 30 points per game. That's a problem. You give up nearly 30 points per game, your offense can't score 30 points per game. Are you kidding me? So you fall behind, then you try to throw the ball. But once you get behind by two touchdowns, if you're the Cowboys, the hope tends to shrivel up and die. It goes poof because that offense cannot score those kind of points on a consistent basis. That's not happening. So I can understand the frustration. Still, though, I don't get the sense, based on how they look on the sidelines and what we see from them in games, that they're all on the same page and they're going to stick together. And again, that goes back to leadership. And without Dak, it's a big deal. I think he was in a suite. Marco, I'm not sure if you saw him. It looked like he was in a suite. And that's where he was watching the game. He did have what are those called? Surface? He had a surface in front of him.
Did he? I saw him pregame on the crutches. I didn't see it after that.
Gotcha. So he had a tablet. I think it's a Surface, a Microsoft Surface. Yeah. And he was kind of watching that way, but he was in a suite, so he wasn't down on the field, which is probably dangerous for him anyway. That's their leader. He's the guy that tries to keep them positive. Otherwise, I don't know who else does it. Micah Parsons, relatively positive. Maybe he's a little gun shy after what happened last week when he spoke to the media. But this is definitely, it's definitely a team that seems devoid of hope. I mean, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, no, and a lot of it comes from because you wind up with the Jerry Jones circus. Things go south. Parsons is hurt. Prescott's not playing well. And Mike McCarthy's a lame duck coach. What hope do they have? It seems like they're turning on themselves.
Play for contracts in the future.
Well, you know what? Your best players have contracts. Mine is Micah Parsons. So what do they care? And I got to be fair. That it feels like it's almost like Jerry Jones sets this up, because if you have a place where you have so many distractions, so much nonsense, so much BS that you got to deal with, when things go bad, this is what happens. And you have an owner that basically told you, your coach, he's not staying. So we know that. So it was almost like he kind of set this up to feel like it's going to turn on themselves because they got nowhere to go. And I got to be fair, CeeDee Lamb, when did he go from quiet, unassuming, great superstar wide receiver to pain in the ass diva who's got awful body language, who looked like he's ready to throw every player on the field under the bus? When did that happen? Because I missed that. I feel like that day came and it came in a heartbeat. Every pass that's thrown his way, he's always staring at the quarterback. Oh, it's a little behind me. It's a little up. What are you doing? And he stops his routes half the time. What happened to him? I know he got paid.
Disgruntled.
What happened to CeeDee Lamb? It's almost like there was a flip. It was seriously like a switch that went off in his brain. I don't know if he's tired of all the nonsense and the noise, or if this was really the personality and he was able to hide it for a really long time.
Well, right now he's the nonsense and the noise. I mean, he is part of that.
He's culprit number one.
It definitely is noticeable. The cameras are now finding him when he complains. And that first shoot, was it the
It wasn't the interception, right?
But he stopped
dead? I know he ran into the safety,
but then he stopped. And so Cooper Rush is confused because the ball is going where it's supposed to go, and CeeDee Lamb's not there. And they caught him over and over on the broadcast, his body language, his facial expressions. Kind of stuff you're seeing more and more.
Look, the interception is bad. Now, he runs into the safety. He probably should have ran a cleaner route, but I can't sit here and tell you that. And the idea that he gave up on the play is awful, and it looks terrible because the interception's by like like 20 yards. It's terrible. The one, though, that I would say that really kind of stuck out for me, because sometimes that happens and you wind up in the moment or whatever. There was a rollout where he's wide open and Cooper Rush throws it slightly behind him. Now, it's not a good throw by any stretch of the imagination, but it's on his back hip where he can make a play, but he drops it. As the ball's coming to him, he's already got the look on his face of, I can't believe you didn't put this ball on the money. The second it drops, the look and the stare of daggers and the stop that right into Cooper Rush, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're a professional athlete. I understand he missed you. What are we doing here? You're also a guy that's getting paid a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
If it's on your back hip and it's in both of your hands, you should still be able to come up with it. I don't expect you to now turn it into a huge, you know, run after the catch, but I expect you to catch the ball, and I expect you to not look at your quarterback like he just killed your dog. Stop it.
Oh, hey, let's not bring the poor dogs into
this. Be a pro. And but that goes for the whole team. All the way up and down. Even Mike McCarthy, be a pro. And none of them are acting like professionals.
There is a twist with this whole report about his home being up for sale. So we'll explain. I wouldn't jump to conclusions yet if I were you, although you can infer what you like. But there is a piece of information that I've not seen reported about Mike McCarthy's house up for sale. And we'll get a little bit more in the wake of Monday Night Football as the Texans get back on track. Cowboys, though, take another loss at home. Yikes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Today we're sponsored by LinkedIn. Let LinkedIn's deep candidate insights help you find your next Pro Bowl hire today. Post your job for free. Go to LinkedIn.com/recruitment. Terms and conditions apply. Looking to snap a two-game skid, the Texans able to set the tone early.
At the 45-yard line of Dallas, first and 10. Hand off Mixon. Starts right, cuts back left. Has room. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. Touchdown, Joe Mixon.
And no flags.
First of three touchdown runs for Joe Mixon. He had 109 yards rushing, another 44 receiving. Texans disposed the Cowboys 34-10. Call courtesy of the Texans Radio Network. C.J. Stroud threw for 257. He hit Nico Collins four times, 54 yards in his return. While the defense, they sacked Cooper Rush five times, including a 28-yard fumble return for Derek Barnett for a score. Rush threw for 354, touchdown on a pick, but Houston's now 7-4. Dallas fell to 3-7. Giants, a move that seemed obvious after a 2-8 start. Daniel Jones goes to the bench. Tommy DeVito leapfrogging Drew Lock to earn the start Sunday against the Bucs.
I'm excited to see what Tommy brings to the table. That's why he's out there, Pat. Again, we had a lot of conversations, studied a lot of stuff, and again, have confidence in Tommy, and that's the reason why he's in there.
That's head coach Brian Daboll. Elsewhere, add Brock Purdy to the 49ers, walking wounded day-to-day, dealing with right shoulder soreness. NBA, the Bucks upend the Rockets 101-100 on a Damian Lillard drive with 3.9 remaining, finished with 18 points and 10 assists. Clippers cooled off the Warriors 102-99. Heat rolled the Sixers 106-89 as Jimmy Butler 30 points and 10 boards. Knicks dominate the Wizards 134-106. Magic handled the Suns 109-99. Hawks clip the Kings 109-108. Raptors overpowered the Pacers 130-119. Courtesy of R.J. Barrett pouring in 39, and the Bulls finished off the Pistons 122-112. College hoops, Gonzaga buried San Diego State 80-67. Auburn thumped North Alabama 102-69. Iowa State drubbed IU Indianapolis 87-52. Wisconsin upended UT Rio Grande Valley 87-84. And Arkansas had no problems with Pacific 91-72. Baseball, Rookie of the Year is announced. Pair of pitchers, Paul Skeens of the Pirates took home the NL honor. Yankees' Luis Gil in the American League. I'm Marco Belletti.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Follow us on X. Our handle is INF Sports Network. That's INF Sports Network on X.
man. It was picked up, and then it was knocked free again by Petrie. And then picked up on the play by Barnett, who went from the 20 to the 10 to the 5. Houston has scored on a fumble recovery touchdown by Derek Barnett.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Terrific call from Kevin Harlan, as usual, on Westwood One. A forced fumble by Barnett on Cooper Rush, only to have it picked up by, or recovered, I should say, initially, by Guyton. And then it's knocked away again by Petrie and recovered by Barnett, where he rumbles into the end zone for a touchdown. Nearly stepped out of bounds, too. So it was quite the dicey sequence, but the Texans get the touchdown at the end of it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Which coaches do you believe will end up getting fired or replaced, either before season's end or once we're done with Week 18? 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. The question has been asked and answered, but Jerry Jones still facing it, whether or not he would make in-season coaching changes.
Well, I have made a change, and I've never I've made a change early and on a coach with Chan Gailey, and I've always regretted that. And I've made a change during the season, and I've regretted that. And so that's the music I'm listening to.
In other words, I've done it before. I don't like how it worked out, and I've regretted it. So that sounds like a no to me. And he did answer it before with a resounding no, that he wasn't considering a coaching change, and he believed they had all the right people in the building. I don't know if that still holds, but don't hold your breath for an in-season change with Mike McCarthy. Now, the report is out there that Mike McCarthy's home, his mansion, is up for sale. As it turns out, it was put on the market in July. Okay, so this is not new news. It's just news that is only going public. So he's got himself a real estate deal because the sale is pending. But this house that's located about 10 miles from team headquarters at the Star in Frisco, I was there in September. I was there in September. It went up for sale in the summertime. Okay, so people are now speculating he knew he was a lame duck coach because he didn't have a new contract, and that's why he put his home on the market. Well, it took until now for them to get an agreement, a contract to sell it. But here's the caveat. How can he and his family stick around if he's selling his home? Well, turns out he owns another home in the area. This one valued at only $2 million compared to the $5.5 million that the mansion was valued at, the one that's about to be sold. Apparently, he bought another home right after the 23 season. Oh, okay. Well, that would be at the end of last year when Dan Quinn moved to Washington to take over the Commanders. This is why Mike McCarthy is selling his mansion, because he also owns Dan Quinn's former house. Okay, so he's got two homes. He's got to sell one of them. It's been on the market since July. They finally come to an agreement. That's not a great indicator that Mike McCarthy knows that his days are numbered in Dallas. If you're looking around the rest of the NFL, and we will talk about this as we move forward on the show, Jacksonville appears to be one franchise where the writing is in blood on the wall. Is that mean? Is that very dramatic of me? The writing, it's in blood on the wall. Doug Peterson's days are numbered in Jacksonville.
The blood part.
In blood. Yeah, I don't know why I said that. Halloween is behind us. What about some other places? I've heard Cincinnati. I don't know that I agree with Cincinnati. Where do you think there will be coaching changes? And keeping in mind, roughly 25% of the NFL head coaching jobs turn over every season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.